The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome in, everybody. It's time for another edition of Everything You Need to Know. I have to start off today by telling you, well, first I should tell you, this is Kip Kiefer, as per usual, as our weekly visit ensues here. I was on the road last week in Atlanta and then on down to New Orleans for a weekend. We had a big Alabama horse race at the fairgrounds, which was a fun day, certainly out there at that legendary track that's been a New Orleans staple for over 100 years. And then attended the Phoenix Suns and New Orleans Pelicans NBA game. I hadn't been to an NBA game in a while. And let me tell you, the experience is certainly different than the good old days, because it's almost like you go to a basketball game and this three-ring circus breaks out. I understand we live in an era where entertainment is absolutely essential, I guess, to keep the attention span of people. But this was a big game. The top two teams right now in the Western Conference, the Pelicans with Zion Williamson, who is just dynamic. This is the next great superstar in the NBA. He had an off night. He only had 35 points. He is just sensational for the Pelicans. But the point is, these games now are completely surrounded by the loudest music and continuous noise that accompanies the game, which back in the old days, it really wasn't like that. And my least favorite aspect of the new era of sports, I guess, is there's a guy with a microphone, not the PA man. This is some other guy that yells and screams and always continually tries to pump the crowd up, even on the microphone, every time, whether it's a one-point game or the home team's up by 20. He is yelling in the microphone as the other team comes to the forecourt. Defense! Defense! You know, the crowd yelling defense is one thing. But I was with the great Alan Johnson, AJ, for a lot of listeners here in Birmingham. And I kind of poked AJ and said, what's the deal with this guy just yelling and screaming the whole game? And he goes, well, he's the hype guy. And I that's not a feature that I was really familiar with. The hype guy. You know, the hype guy needs to stand down and let the action kind of dictate some of the excitement, because a ticket to an NBA game these days is not a small investment. And I really do not personally enjoy the talents of the hype guy constantly screaming at me to get to my feet and make noise and, you know, implore me to join him with his defense comment. It's just crazy. Every time out, there is something. They have a promotion, giveaway, a contest for patrons, a trivia contest. Or the other thing is, four times during the game, they had pop-up performers, which basically is a rap performer coming out on the floor accompanied by ear-splitting music and basically shouting the same lyric over and over and over. And again, I know I'm a dinosaur from another era. I don't have any problem with rap music, but you know, it's just not my thing. I like lyrics. Tony Curry Radio, of course, and Tony Curry himself, famous for classic rock and all of the accoutrements of that. And I just love lyrics. The modern day version of that, we're just shouting the same thing over and over and over, is just kind of a thing that I'm not really into. So it was quite the experience, but a great game. The Pelicans, who have never been a really good team, have it going on, and the fans in New Orleans are just in a tizzy as they handled Chris Paul and the Phoenix Suns in that game. So I've come back with a little remembrance from New Orleans, a little bit of a sinus cold and some headaches and whatnot. But I guess now venturing out anywhere with all these different strains of flu and virus around, I guess I was pretty much guaranteed to come back with some souvenir of my weekend in New Orleans. But I'm soldiering on. So if I sound a little different, that's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it. You know, that line comes from the famous baseball book by Jim Boulton, who was a New York Yankee who wrote a diary over a whole season. And that was in the early 60s. So players and everybody were appalled that Boulton would do this and publish it, because that was the day where the sanctity of the clubhouse and everything said stays in the clubhouse, et cetera, et cetera. But Boulton's book is just hilarious. He's talking about a pitcher who goes out after a game and ends up staying out all night, comes back home, and strolls into his living room where his wife greets him and says, "Where have you been? Are you just now coming in?" He goes, "Oh, no, I got here late last night, and I didn't have my house key. And I just went around the backyard. I just slept out there on the trampoline because I didn't want to wake you up banging on the door and, you know, startle you." And she said, "Well, that's interesting. You know, we took the trampoline down 2 months ago." And he looked at her without missing a beat and says, "Well, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it." So that's where that one-liner comes from. Let's get into the subject matter, as I have now babbled on for the first 10 minutes on my weekend, which I hope you found compelling. But New Orleans is like no other place. It's always an experience to go there. I want to talk about, we mentioned him last week, I want to talk about Elon Musk and the continuing series of Twitter tapes or files or whatever they're calling them that continues to be released. And some of the astounding things I told you last week here that Elon Musk's efforts, which are being, you know, there's terror in the streets of the progressive left that, you know, he's telling them everything. He's releasing internal documents that basically describe all of the goings on and all of the efforts to suppress and censor and shadow ban and completely keep any stories that were not fitting the narrative of the Biden campaign in 2020 or of this progressive movement and all the things they're doing. And, you know, that was disturbing enough in the initial initial files that were released. But I said last week, I didn't learn anything. It was clear that that's what was going on. I can tell you, as I did, I think I mentioned it last week, at one point I had almost 3,100 subscribers, 3,100 followers is what they call it in Twitter. And it was not unusual for me to post something and see next to no response, if any at all. And what turned out in one of the latest document drops is the policy of the algorithmic suppression of any kind of mention of anything that they did not want to be seen. And, you know, I'm a small fish. We're talking about the New York Post and of course, the former president, Donald Trump, who was banished and not allowed to continue to tweet. They didn't banish me. They just basically created an algorithm, since I was mentioning subjects they didn't want talked about, such as the Hunter Biden laptop story, because that was early on. And I was already fully aware of everything that was going on with that and the fact that it was being kept out of the public view. In fact, on one of my more explosive posts on that, talking about the absolute proof that his dad, now the President Joe Biden, who denied having any knowledge whatsoever of Hunter's, quote, international business affairs. That's interesting, since one of his biggest acquisitions was a $1.5 billion commitment from the Bank of China, which is run, of course, by the Chinese Communist Party. He actually traveled to China on Air Force Two with Joe Biden, then vice president. And I'm sure that Hunter Biden, who was dishonorably discharged from the military, who had no practical experience in any kind of business, particularly in the field of investments, who had started his own investment firm, supposedly, before this trip. I find it very difficult to believe that Hunter Biden, on his own credentials, could secure meetings with the Chinese Communist Party and the top government and banking officials of China. I think any logical person with any common sense would know that Joe Biden finagled those events. And as revealed in the laptop numerous times, Hunter Biden was also cutting Joe in on the action to the tune of about 10%, typically. Several times there's references to, quote, the big guy getting his 10%. Also, there's a lot of material on that laptop where Hunter Biden is literally bitching and complaining about having to pay so many of Joe's expenses. His house renovations, his day-to-day, you know, expense. And Hunter Biden was supplementing the time that Joe Biden was out of office between his vice presidency and winning the presidency in 2020. And he let everybody know about it. So these were things that had been leaked or had come out because the New York Post already had hold of the laptop. And it, you know, the New York Post immediately, they were completely shut down on Twitter, not allowed to post anymore. And all of that, again, was you know, you could kind of use your common sense and see what was going on. But the revelations this week that there was a regular weekly meeting between members of social media platforms, including Twitter, the FBI, the DNI, the Department of National Intelligence, and the DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, to discuss justification and strategies to make sure that these information bursts did not get into the public eye. And it explains so much because it was puzzling that 52 former intelligence officials, including five directors, published the now infamous document that said that the Hunter Biden laptop had all the, quote, earmarks of a Russian misinformation policy or procedure, unquote. That was the letter that they all signed, and it's clear that the fact that the meetings were regularly happening with Facebook, with Twitter, urging them to make sure to not have any of that information published, or if they did not do that, at least have it on an algorithm situation where very few eyes would come across it. Those policies and procedures were established in those meetings, and these documents absolutely prove, with beyond any shadow of a doubt, that this was a regular thing that was happening. And every American should shudder in their boots, because suppression of free speech, if there's not free speech and expression in our country, then we are really in a bad way and have lost our way in terms of what we're supposed to be. So I thought those revelations this week were astounding, and more information continues to come out. I hope you heard my show a couple weeks ago when I talked about Elon Musk, who's now, of course, public enemy number one. They are mad as banshees now. And, you know, Elon Musk is the worst guy on earth, according to people with this ideology. But I find it all really ironic, because this is not Donald Trump or some right wing, you know, America first guy. Elon Musk was born in South Africa. He immigrated to Canada, eventually found his way to the United States. Of course, he's been one of the most successful business figures in modern American history. And I pointed out last week, and it's something I think everybody should consider, that Elon Musk has previously been almost a darling of the left progressive movement with all of his innovations. And you talk about progressive, he is the very definition of the word progressive individual. The Tesla company, the development of electric cars, and all of the things that all his various companies are into. And I think the one that's most astounding is that Elon Musk has personally donated millions and millions of dollars to companies and entities who are working to develop renewable energy, particularly solar energy companies and organizations. And that does not sound to me like a rampant right winger, like they're trying to paint him now, that he is some terrible threat to what they want to do and threat to democracy, because the threat to democracy is the biggest bunch of that's out there, because the threat they fear is the threat to their agenda. And anytime somebody rocks the boat, like the former president, Donald Trump, who is public enemy number one, sorry, Elon, you still haven't reached that status, but they fear Trump because he doesn't put up with any of the intimidation tactics, or as I often quote, Saul Alinsky in his book, The Radical's Handbook, said that our best weapon against people that are dissenters is public ridicule. And it doesn't work on mavericks and successful people like Donald Trump, like Elon Musk, even though they are completely different in the way they go about things and the way ideologically they are built. So that was some other really good information this week. I don't care what your politics are. I don't care what your beliefs are. If you are embracing being an American, this stuff should be very, very disturbing to anyone, that we have top government officials from our federal government inserting themselves in media companies and also social media companies and trying to suppress information, again, out of just sheer fear. Donald Trump had to be taken down, and anything that threatened that was going to be something of just top priority for our federal government officials. Trump was viewed by the D.C. swamp as the greatest threat to their existence of massive federal government, and all of the tens of thousands of bureaucrats and lifelong appointees that are embroiled in Washington day-to-day operations. Trump had to go. He was already working, I think I've mentioned before on the show, on a new Schedule F approach to employment of government officials. Right now, you cannot basically get rid of somebody in government. They are pretty much lifelong appointments. But Trump was working at the end of his term to create a new class of employee employed by the federal government that was subject to forced retirement or termination in the case that they weren't being productive. Imagine a system on merit, not just the entitlement of having a lifelong position. So a lot of interesting aspects to this, but Trump had to go and look at the actions of people in our own government with Twitter, with Facebook, and also all the other traditional media outlets. And you don't see any coverage on CBS or ABC or NBC or the New York Times or the Washington Post as Elon Musk continues to release internal documents from Twitter. This is not anything contrived. This is the actual memos and information exchange between Twitter executives and all of these entities in our government. And that is a scary thing. It doesn't sound like America to me. Sounds more like Nazi Germany or Soviet Russia back in the day. So we don't need our news media. We don't need a state-run media, a free press and expression of ideas is an absolute must if we're going to continue on in the great tradition that this country was founded on. So that's the update on that. I wanted to talk just a minute too about, I was having some thoughts a couple months ago, and I should have probably recorded some those thoughts at that point, but I want to kind of play catch up here. October 20th, 1946 was the birth date of a great American, a great journalist, one of my heroes, and really a big influence on me, on my writing styles. When I wrote my book, What Does George Clooney Have That I Ain't Got? It was really kind of with the model of the late, great Louis Grizzard in mind. Louis Grizzard was born in Fort Benning, Georgia, the son of a soldier who fought in the Korean War and was badly wounded. Most of his platoon wiped out, and it haunted him the rest of his life. One of Louis Grizzard's book was My Daddy Was a Pistol and I'm a Son of a Gun. He wrote 25 books, a lot of them compilations of his columns. He started at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution after graduating from the University of Georgia, and was the all-time dog fan. He would be really reveling in the current Georgia Bulldog success. But Louis Grizzard went to work for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution as a sports writer. And incredibly, at the ripe old age of 23, I mean, just think about that. 23 years old, Louis Grizzard was named the executive sports editor of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Still the youngest to ever have that designation at a major U.S. newspaper. He was just a brilliant writer. He had such a tongue-in-cheek kind of Southern view of everything. He was a great sports writer. Covered the Braves, covered Georgia, wrote columns on just about everything. Some of the book titles are just hilarious. Shoot Low, Boys, They're Riding Shetland Ponies. His first compilation was Kathy Sue Loudermilk, I Love You. That was his true crush and whatnot in high school. For a time, Louis Grizzard got a big promotion opportunity to go to Chicago and work for the Sun-Times as the managing editor of the entire newspaper. And while in Chicago, he wrote several other books, including If I Ever Get Back to Georgia, I'm Going to Nail My Feet to the Ground. He was absolutely great in stage appearances. Toward the end of his life, he had kind of gravitated into more of a live presence than just a writer, because he had that Southern drawl and was just Georgia through and through. He had so many famous quotes, one of which, it's impossible to be too Southern. Grizzard did get back to Atlanta, went back to work for the Atlanta Journal, and as I mentioned, kind of branched out into a lot of different appearances. Actually saw him in Birmingham in the early 90s here. I'm trying to find the words to really paint the picture of just what an exemplary guy he was. One of my favorite quotes, Louis was great at writing and comedy, not so good at matrimony. Louis Grizzard had four wives in his time, and he finally, in that one of those appearances I saw, he said, you know, I'm going to start a new policy starting this year. I'm going to walk out on the street, find a woman I don't really like, and give her a house. He said, that'll save a lot of time and trouble for all of us. And I'll do that once a year starting this year. Tragically, Louis Grizzard had a congenital heart defect. He had a valve that was not functioning properly. And in the early 90s, actually had kind of groundbreaking surgery where the valve, a heart valve from a hog, was inserted into his heart. And for a couple of years, it seemed to work, but then his body started to reject that that new piece. And sadly, at the age of 47, Louis Grizzard left us in 1994, far, far too early. If you ever have a chance and want to be thoroughly entertained, there are so many of these books that he wrote, and they're out there, and you can order them on Amazon or any of those book dealers. But at the very least, look at the Wikipedia page and some stories about Louis Grizzard if you're not familiar with him. If you like just pure Southern just great writing style and a guy with a unique perspective. This was a guy that I don't think people should ever forget. And he certainly was a hero to me, so I wanted to do that brief tribute. We're running short on time, as we tend to do here. I feel like I'm just getting warmed up, and it's time to shut it down. But I hope everybody has a fantastic week. It's Christmas right around the corner, hard to believe. We'll be with you next week, and that'll be the beginning of Christmas week. I'm really excited to be going out to Las Vegas, number one son, my young sports editor. But, you know, unlike Rizard, who got that job at 23, my son was a gold bricker. He's a slacker. He was 29 when he became sports editor of the Las Vegas Sun. But my first grandson, King Kiefer, is out in Las Vegas. Can't wait. He'll be about 2.5 years old for this Christmas. And this will be the first one he's got real recognition. And there's nothing like experiencing Christmas through the eyes of a child. So I am super pumped for this trip and looking forward to relating some of those experiences with all of you. I can't thank you enough, all of you, for tuning in and finding the podcast each week. I hope your Christmas season and holiday season is going to be splendid. We are looking forward to every minute of it, I can tell you, with absolutely no hesitation. Thanks, everybody, and thank you for joining us on the fabulous Tony Curry Network and on Spotify, wherever you're listening. We'll be back next week with more thoughts and observations of what you need to know.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.